Good morning, ladies and gentlemen, dear chairman. First and foremost, thank you for the opportunity to take part in this wonderful meeting. I have nothing to declare. In my speech, I would like to address a clinical problem tackled by electrophysiologists and heart failure specialists alike, the suboptimal response to CRT. I will shortly talk about the causes and follow with the role that MR imaging can play in this setting. Although cardiac resynchronization therapy took off in no time and proved itself to be very effective, the number of patients who failed to benefit from it has not changed substantially over a long period of time. Common causes of suboptimal CRT response include suboptimal LV placement, LV lead placement, and ineffective electromechanical resynchronization, ineffective atrioventricular and interventricular timings, and untreated anemia. In my opinion, maybe with the exception of the latter, MRI has much to offer here. So, how can MRI help? Primarily, in the preoperative management and assessment. It is considered as a gold standard when it comes to evaluation of a chamber size and function. It is capable of delineating myocardial scar, thus telling us where not to put the LV lead, be the patient without a device, as in the first case, or already a proud owner of an ICD, or as in the last case, subcutaneous ICD. In the latter case, you would probably like to avoid the lateral scar seen on the MRI image. Additionally, the analysis of myocardial disynchrony can pinpoint the optimal position of the left ventricle lead. This analysis was already possible in the year 2014. Was been able by the group from London. And this diagram, on the left side, we see a normal healthy patient. On the right side, we see a diagram of a patient with a ventricular disynchrony with a left bundle branch block. So again, we are able to identify like a spot, a segment of the myocardium where mechanical activation is the latest. When it comes to cardiac vein imaging and mapping with MRI, it is possible in some cases, and in this patient, where we are able to segment the coronary sinus and some of its branches. This technique is probably easily outperformed with cardiac CT. These MRI acquisitions can be subsequently analyzed and analyzed within a dedicated workflow. This is a diagram of a workflow used in a guide a CRT study. When in the first step, we see the segmentation of the left ventricle. In the second one, we see like a 3D model, 3D mesh segmentation. In the third one, we see the LGE imaging, which tells us where is the scar, where would be not the best place to put an LV lead. This information is summarized here, and we're able to see them during the procedure itself. It looks like this, and here we see all of the myocardial segments of the left ventricle, myocardial scar, the scar burden, scar transmurality, mechanical activation, and these can be displayed within this three-dimensional model. where we see a scar, it's in the red, and a blue spot, like marking the spot of the latest mechanical activation of the left ventricle. This shell, this model, can be subsequently registered during fluoroscopy imaging. And even displayed during procedure with some degree of motion tracking. We see like the angiography of the coronary sinus with some possible locations of the IV lead placement, or like in some branches of the coronary sinus here. The collected data can be used to create a virtual patient-specific prediction models for ventricular mechanics during biventricular pacing with different electrode positions and timing settings. In this way, we could theoretically predict the optimal lead placement and optimal programming for each and individual placement. In this workflow, we would use an MRI cine imaging with a delineation of the left ventricle and analysis of left ventricle mechanics, the LGE imaging for the delineation of the myocardial scar, then some workflows, or some theoretical workflow did include diffuse tensor imaging to include the myocardial fibers. Then we need some electrophysiological input from some ECG tracings of this patient. And then we are able to create a model with a contraction and the propagation of the action potential in the myocardium. As we look back on our real patients who already have an implanted CRT device, MRI can still be safely performed, as we learned in some speeches yesterday. And performed with an acceptable image quality, as we can see here. These are already mentioned cine images made with a spoiled gradient echo sequence, actually an older sequence used increasingly in patients with implanted devices, as it does not suffer such an artifact burden as the SSFP sequence. This enables us to measure changes in ventricular volumes and function, and to delineate the left ventricle epicardially and endocardially. And we decided to do this at six different interventricular DOA settings for each patient. And we are able to identify an optimal delay with the best ventricular response for individual patients. As you can see, this was more apparent for the patients with a better ejection fraction. We can pinpoint the best possible timing to program these patients when you get the best ejection fraction, best stroke volume. It was unfortunately less apparent for the patient with even more pronouncedly reduced ejection fraction. In the 10 analyzed patients, we observed an increase of the ejection fraction and stroke volume with the optimal setting as seen with MRI compared to the setting that was deemed optimal after an echocardiography-based optimization. Like these measures are all based on CMR imaging, and we compared here the previously optimized interventricular timing with the actual or the deemed best during a CMR exam timing. We are able to observe an increase in the stroke volume and in the left ventricular ejection fraction for the for these 10 patients that we analyzed. Apart from the CINE images, there are some other means of analyzing left ventricular output. And this is a reconstruction of an image made using phase contrast MRI. We can see the tracking of the aorta ascendance and flow data being superimposed on this image. Based on this image, we see the ICD signal void in the left upper corner. As we see, like there's no flow data coded, and this signal void is fairly far from ascending aorta. It is like not probable that the signal void, this artifact, will affect our measurement. In this case, we had a patient with a dilated cardiomyopathy with a really pronounced inferolateral scar. And we have seen that that the LV lead was implanted directly in the middle of this scar. As we paced the patient with this LV lead, we observed that there was a kind of a huge temporal delay between stimulation at this area to the QRS as seen in the surface ECG. So we ended up with basically two possibilities: either pace the patients from the LV lead or right ventricular lead. It was like difficult to say what would be the best or from the hemodynamical point of view for this patient. We did the phase contrast MRI and measured stroke volume in ascending aorta. And we've seen actually like pacing with the LV lead would be probably hemodynamically more beneficial to the patients, resulting in a greater stroke volume as compared to the right ventricular pacing. Based on a previously shown CINE images made with spoiled gradient echo, it is feasible to perform even a segmental strain analysis. Here, we are looking at the same LV short axis slice in a patient with a CRTD during right ventricular, as seen on the top, B ventricular, as seen in the middle, and left ventricular pacing. We see the short axis here, and the color coding as for the radial strain for this specific slice. On the right, we see a plot of the global radial strain for each of the programming. It may not be apparent when we are looking on a contraction of the left ventricle here, but we saw that we are able in this curve to see the contraction of the septum, contraction of the lateral wall, to identify that that we see actually two peaks for the programming with a pure right ventricular pacing. And we see something similar here. If we just pace from the left side, we see a lateral wall contracting sooner than the septum. The diagram is just slightly shifted. And in the middle, we see a biventricular pacing with a single peak, which corresponds to more synchronous contractions of the left ventricle. We subsequently measured peak radial strain for each of these curves, and we can see that the peak radial strains was the highest in the biventricular pacing as compared to RVE or LV only pacing. This was made in a single slice, single position, in the patients with a fixed programming with a fixed heart rate. The patient was like as usual in asynchronous pacing mode with a fixed heart rate of 85. And subsequently, we were able to do a 3D myocardial strain analysis in the same patient. Here we can see myocardial contractions as displayed by 3D radial strain in this model. And this is during left ventricular pacing. I think it is apparent that the contraction contraction master would not be deemed optimal, as we see like lateral wall contracting much sooner than the septal wall. After all, It is still unclear if this other indices for left ventricular function, like other than ejection fraction, other than stroke volume, are able to add some extra information. We still don't know if this translates to clinical benefit. But in my opinion, if we have modality with no radiation, non-invasive imaging, that could possibly improve the outcome of a patient with CRT, we should welcome it. Surely, the MRI imaging would be associated with additional costs, but the question that needs to be asked here is the real cost of CRT non-response as well. At this time point, I think we just need to examine patients, collect data, and see if we see some clinical benefit in the future. Thank you for your attention.
Thank you very much for sharing with us your thoughts about the future on MRI guided lead placement and optimization of programming and pacing. I think it's probably too early to really say that this is part, that this can be part of a routine workup, because I mean, for us it seems really a very meticulous, very thorough workup, but also quite time consuming and maybe not really cost efficacious, but very fascinating. So if we go back to the beginning of the lead placement, you said that this may improve outcome. Do you have any evidence that when you use this guidance, that you then can reduce the amount of non-responders? Or let's ask it the other way around. Do you use it especially in those where you suspect that they may be prone to be non-responders, so they don't have the real classic huge left bundle branch block? Are these the candidates, or how do you select patients?
This is quite a new data. And for this specific system, we don't have prospective data. We don't have data that would say that the patient would benefit from this. There is some data on the LV placement and the success of the LV placement during such a procedure has been shown to be with increased success rate if we use this this system.
Okay. Any other questions from the audience?
I have one question. If you have a lateral scar, huge lateral scar, and there is no vein that is really sort of reaching any part besides it, do you exclude a patient on this basis, or do you say, okay, I know there's scar, I have to program differently, or is it really a criteria to exclude a patient with a lateral scar?
The system works as a guidance. Like, it doesn't tell us where to put a V lead. It just like tell us during the procedure and displays it like on the fluoroscopy screen where are possible veins, where is the segment of latest activation, the optimal position, and where is the scar. There is a possibility of there being no ideal vein, and there is a possibility of there being a huge scar. And of course, in this case, this wouldn't add up to the information that we need.
There's one question from the floor.
One very short question, and you may have said that, I just didn't hear that. How long does it take to optimize? Do you also optimize AV delay? And the third thing is in regard to Dietmar's point, maybe these are the patients who will benefit from his bundle pacing rather than cardiac resynchronization.
That's what I was intending, really. Is it a good exclusion criterion?
AV optimization, like, not really. This is easily done in with echocardiography. And at this moment, like, I don't see a benefit of such optimization with MRI. The first process or the first method I mentioned is rather time-consuming. Like, one needs at least an hour for these patients within an MRI scanner, and I probably mentioned that we do the programming inside the MRI scanner. We try to push the programmer behind the safe ghost line, like in the MRI room, and this saves a lot of time. And more importantly, we don't need to move a patient inside the scanner. So the single thing that changes during such optimization is just the programming. There's a fixed frequency, fixed heart rate, I mean, so like fixed position of a patient in scanner. Everything stays the same, roughly. With the second method I mentioned, the idea behind this would be to speed up the process. With phase contrast, we would be able to get the data much quicker, and this would just take 1 or 2 minutes for the each programmed interventricular delay.
Okay. There are no further questions, so very exciting work. So we're very anxious to hear about the next step on that. Thank you very much for your presentation.
Thank you.